Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker. The ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach will be partially shut down through Monday. This comes in the wake of a dispute between union workers and port companies. The Pacific Maritime Association accuses workers of intentionally slowing port operations during the contract dispute. By declaring a shutdown, the employers won't have to pay weekend and holiday rates over the long weekend. The unions deny a work slowdown. They blame the companies for not giving enough training, resulting in a lack of qualified workers. Just a few hours ago, the Los Angeles City Council voted down a plan for Live Nation to take over the Greek Theater. Sarah Crevoy has details.
The LA City Council voted to overturn a Parks and Recreation Commission's decision to award Live Nation control over the Greek Theater's concessions. The council heard hours of arguments from supporters of both Live Nation and Nederlander AEG, the longtime operator of the concert venue. Those supporting Live Nation, including many LA residents, say politics is getting in the way of the decision.
I think it's kind of a travesty of the public contracting process, and I think that it's becoming more political than it should have been.
The executive director of Heart of Los Angeles spoke in support of Nederlander maintaining control of the theater.
There needs to be more advocates and programs and companies like AG Nederlander supporting the good work that's done in the city of LA.
The council wants the commission to solicit new bids for the management of the Greek Theater. This is Sarah Crevoy with Annenberg Radio News.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti signed a series of business tax cuts into law today. Megan Coyle reports.
The tax cuts were passed last week by city council as a first step in phasing out the gross receipts tax. They will result in $90 million in savings for businesses over the next 3 years. It's estimated it will mean a $45 million revenue loss for the city. But the mayor says it will still attract more businesses to LA. In exchange for the tax cuts, the Los Angeles Business Council endorsed Mayor Garcetti's plan to raise the minimum wage to $13.25 by 2017. It is the first major business group to sign on to the increase. The Chamber of Commerce and other business groups say they're still against a hike in the minimum wage. Megan Coyle, Annenberg Radio News.
HIV and AIDS funding is expected to be cut back in Los Angeles County this year. Officials say the county will cut $4 million in AIDS funding contracts since more patients are insured under the Affordable Care Act. Nonprofit organizations acknowledge the decrease in need, but they say there are still 24,000 people who will not receive care under the proposed cuts. Nearly 100 home health care workers protested in downtown Los Angeles today. They're asking Governor Jerry Brown and the state of California to pay them for overtime. Kate Flexter has the story.
Overtime is overdue. That's what Guillermo Vasquez and dozens of other care workers say. Last year, Vasquez's grandfather suffered severe kidney failure. Vasquez stepped up and became his grandfather's caretaker, taking him to dialysis 3 times a week while he waits for a transplant.
It's taken a toll financially because he's gotten a little bit better, so maybe now I can find a part-time job, but I would like to just focus on taking care of him like he deserves to be taken care of.
The state pays Vasquez for 20 hours a week, but he works far more than that. The protesters say Governor Brown agreed to include them under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which makes them eligible to be paid for more hours. But in January, Governor Brown halted implementation of the program after a federal judge overturned a rule requiring overtime protections for home care workers. Kate Flexter, Annenberg Radio News.
A diverse group gathered today in downtown Los Angeles to come up with strategies for preventing violence. Madeline Ulls reports on the Stand With Me Summit.
Youth leaders and California elected officials, as well as nonprofit leaders, attended the summit that took place at the California Endowment. The event featured discussions on ways to sustain nonviolent schools and communities. Here's City Attorney Mike Fuhrer.
When kids live in a household where there's domestic abuse, we should do everything we can to suppress that abuse so that kid can grow up in a safe and secure environment.
The goal of the summit is to come up with a plan of action to address violence in local communities and schools. According to Youth Over Violence advocate Jose Meneses, many students in Los Angeles don't have healthy relationships with teachers. He believes that's one of the community's biggest problems.
Counselors and teachers need to be knowledgeable about issues that happen within the teens, or within the students that they teach.
The summit was hosted by the City Attorney's Office, LAUSD, and Peace Over Violence, a nonprofit that aims for elimination of violence against women and children. Madeline Uhls, Annenberg Radio News.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti and the Annenberg Foundation held a special dedication in San Pedro for one of the innovators of AltaSea, a planned urban marine research center. The AltaSea campus will have circulating seawater labs, offices, and classrooms for marine-related commercial ventures. Construction at the port will begin in 2017 and will be completed by 2019. It was another choppy day on Wall Street, with the Dow ticking lower, the Nasdaq edging higher, and the S&P 500 trading flat. Earnings season is in full swing, and several high-profile companies released their quarterly reports after today's trading session. Many investors had their eyes on Tesla Motors, which posted underwhelming results. The Palo Alto automaker did not meet analysts' expectations on revenue and vehicle sales, leading to a 6-point drop in share price after hours. A college basketball legend with local ties passed away earlier today. Max Holm looks back at the career of Jerry Tarkanian.
Coach Tarkanian led the Running Rebels to 4 Final Fours in the 1990 National Championship. The Rebels' 103-73 win over Duke was and still is the largest margin of victory in a championship game. A native of Pasadena, Tarkanian also coached at Fresno State and started his career at Long Beach State in 1969, where he won 86% of his games. Chris Trevino of the Long Beach Press-Telegram explains how Tark was a trailblazer from the beginning of his coaching career.
He was really the one who started that trend. He would go into inner cities to bring these young African-American guys onto the court. He was one of the first to do that. So I think that kind of ruffled the NCAA the wrong way.
To many, Tark was more than just a basketball coach.
The biggest thing he would harp with his players, he would take them to the side and, say, not everyone is going to make it to that final step. Not everyone is going to play professionally. So I want you to get a degree. I want you to start thinking about what you're going to do after basketball. Because if it doesn't work out, what do you have to fall back on?
The city of Las Vegas lowered its flags to half staff at City Hall on Wednesday in tribute to Tarkanian. Max Holm, Annenberg Radio News.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Caitlin Plummer with today's Root Source.
Swag, the notorious battle cry of a hip-hop generation.
Sway, sway, sway.
Used to boast about money or show a sense of confidence, the word has penetrated all corners of pop culture since Jay-Z introduced its modern use in his 2003 record, The Black Album. Originating from Norway in the 1520s, the word swag was used to describe an unsteady swaying motion. More than two centuries later, this description transformed into a word for festive decorations like garlands and wreaths. Then, in the mid-1800s, the word developed into a slang term that loosely relates to its modern connotation of wealth. The word swagger, on the other hand, is where swag's reputation for confidence comes from. Swagger was first recorded in 1590 in Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, meaning to walk with a defiant air or to brag noisily. So next time you turn your swag on, remember to thank the people who had swagger before you.
Mark Johns is a visual artist. He stages absurd narratives that bring humor to everyday objects. His whimsical blog, Serious Drawings, has blown up since its creation 10 years ago. Vanessa Wilson spoke with Johns about his inspiration and process.
When I was in high school, my best friend introduced me to a blog of an online gallery created by Canadian artist Mark Johns. The irony of the blog titled Serious Drawings was evident once I scrolled through the images of bearded fish, runaway pants, disgruntled furniture, and eccentric characters. I was hooked. I personally really like the inanimate objects and their thoughts, what you think their thoughts would be. And yeah. I've often wondered, does Mark just look at inanimate objects and find it hard not to wonder what they're thinking about?
Yeah.
I mean, you got me on this thing now where I'll be doing something and I'm like, did Mark Johns ever draw like a Q-tip? Because it would suck to be a Q-tip. Like, do they just come to you? How does that work?
Well, they do. They sort of, and I'll look at something and think, what's it like to be, you know, a coffee mug? And would I like hot coffee on me, or would that like hurt every single time? I've never done a drawing about that, but I should. And sometimes it comes just from, there's something that I feel like drawing. It's like, well, I really feel like drawing salt and pepper shakers, but I need an excuse to. I need like a story there. I can't just draw, you know, a still life of salt and pepper shakers. So there has to be something going on. So then I'll create either a dialogue between the two or some scenario where, you know, one of them doesn't want to be salt anymore. He wants to dispense Parmesan cheese. Yeah, that's sort of several ways that those come about.
I've noticed that a lot of your art, they have these captions incorporated into the work. When did that decision come in, or was that always a part of your work?
I think that was always a part of my work. I like words as much as I like pictures. Maybe I'm a frustrated writer, or just a writer of five-word sentences. And I've always liked that play between the two. I'm also a big fan of children's books. And really good children's books have this wonderful magical balance between the words and the pictures. The words tell part of the story and the images tell another part of the story. And then other times I just add words in case you can't tell what it is I drew.
Do you think that happens often?
And I think it happens now and then. It's sort of like, well, that looks like an ice cream playing a trumpet. So I'll actually say on the bottom, ice cream playing the trumpet. It's sort of stating the obvious. And I think it kind of reinforces that deadpan. And just in case you're looking at the image and saying, really, is that an ice cream cone playing trumpet? And you say, yes, in fact, it is. And then you sort of leave it at that.
I think it's fun that you point out the obvious, because it does increase the absurdity of the whole situation. Like, it almost, at least for me, when I look at art, I feel like we're programmed to look at it and be like, okay, what's the deeper message in this image? And so when I look at your art, it always makes me chuckle because it's just that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It literally is just that.
It really is. Exactly. And maybe it comes from my fine arts background. Conceptual art was, you know, one of the higher goals of our projects. So there was always sort of meaning behind it. You know, you'd make something and then that in class would be the critique, and you'd have to talk about what it was about. And so I think you're onto something. So by actually writing on it what it is, it sort of stops it dead in its tracks. Like, well, that's what it is, and that's it. Of course, hopefully there's more to it than that, but the text gets you partway there.
One piece that seems to be extremely popular, the What to Focus On.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your state of mind was when you created it? What were you thinking? By the way, for those of you who aren't familiar with the drawing, What to Focus On is a black and white sketch of a target with the word happy in the center.
That image has resonated with a lot of people. And it came about one time when I was at work and I was really frustrated with something. I can't remember what. And I had a conversation with my wife and she set me straight. She basically said, you know, just don't worry about those things. Focus on all the good stuff that's happening. So I was taking the bus home. That was spinning around in my head, and I pulled out my little notebook and drew that almost exactly as it is, and then decided maybe I should share this. And I was really surprised at how much it resonated, because I just thought, well, this is just a reminder to myself. But I thought, well, it's worth sharing, even though it's like very crudely drawn. And it, yeah, people really responded. They wanted prints of it and stuff, and eventually got tattoos of it. So
what was that like to see your artwork take off onto body art?
Oh boy, I can't believe it. I have no tattoos at all myself. I think I'm A, too chicken to, and B, I don't think there's any single image I could commit to for an entire life. I think I'd get sick of it. And then to have my art on somebody, it still floors me.
To see more of Johns' serious drawing, visit his blog at markjohns.com. That's Mark with a C, by the way. Vanessa Wilson, Annenberg Radio News.
That's it for today. We had help today from Nicholas Ring. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Christian Brown is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Sean Birch. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker.